With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Naomi McLeod.
Hello.
And Matt Knight.
Guten Tag.
That was an incredible automated voice impression, Naomi. I was impressed.
Thank you.
Actually, you have got a very, very good voice for that.
This is like talking to Google Maps.
I appreciate it.
Oh, you lost it a little bit there. I could see a little bit of warble in the voice there. More practice, maybe.
That's the really happy TikTok sound. Okay, I'm done.
I can't say any more of this.
Sorry for scaring you, Matt.
Oh dear. Yes, welcome back, Naomi. It's been a little while since we've had you on an episode. Thanks for coming on and
Absolutely.
Hanging out with us.
Great to be back.
It is great to have you back, and welcome back again, Matthew. You're going to Barcelona tomorrow.
Matt?
Matthew?
I'm here. Sorry, I had to get a tissue. Naomi generally made me spill my beer, so I had to go and get it.
That's quite the suspense, Matt.
Yeah, it was good.
I ran off. Sorry for the dead air, please.
It was like you'd gone to Barcelona already.
Oh, yeah. First time on a plane in 2 years tomorrow.
Oh, wow. Where are you flying out of?
Oh, Gatwick.
Okay, I haven't seen Gatwick in the headlines for Qs, so hopefully you'll you'll be okay.
I mean, to for non-UK listeners, all our airports don't work anymore here in the UK. Everyone's come back post-pandemic, and of course all the airports and the airlines have laid off a bunch of staff, so they've sort of gone back to having the normal amount of flights without realizing that not having any crews for the planes is an issue. It doesn't work here at the moment. You can't leave.
Yeah, I flew out of Dublin yesterday, returning from my holiday back to the UK, and I saw a family sprinting after getting through security. And you shouldn't see a whole family sprinting in an airport.
Little Jimmy's fallen over. Leave him.
We don't have time, Jimmy.
He'll make his own way back.
You brought this on yourself.
Get the next freaking flight, Jimmy.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's probably better places to be trapped. No, worse places to be trapped. I love Barcelona.
Yeah, Barcelona is great.
I was talking to someone who came round to Catsit a while ago and said that her friend was in Barcelona for a holiday, and then, yeah, her flight was cancelled, and they were like, yeah, we can't put you on another flight for another 3 weeks. And at that point, you're like, well, pay for my hotel then.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a euro for a cerveza out there. Like, you could spend 3 weeks happily.
But the thing is, you have to go back to work, and I think that person had left their laptop at home, understandably, as they were on holiday. So it's just like, you know, you've then got to take all of your remaining holiday to be on a holiday you don't actually want to be on.
Wow. Imagine having a job where the holiday is defined by someone else.
Imagine just having a job. Yes, Joe.
Imagine that. Nonetheless, it's going to be great for you to actually get out to Barcelona. What a lovely bit of the world.
I know. I have actually been there probably more times than any other place in Europe.
Really?
Yeah.
Barcelona?
Yeah.
Why do you always have meetings in Barcelona?
No, actually, my best friend used to live out there.
Oh, of course he did, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, 1 year it was a friend of my wife's birthday, and they wanted it in Barcelona, so we went there. Then we went over for a work meeting, and then I went over for their wedding, all in the same year. So I actually went three times in 1 year. But it is crazy. It is scarily cheap to fly abroad. For those of you listening who maybe live in America, I guess maybe it's a bit like domestic flights, but you can fly to another country cheaper than you can get a train to Scotland. So, you know, that's why it's better to go to Barcelona than Scotland.
That is, yes.
I think it's like, I think it's about 50 euros to fly to Barcelona, which is
really,
just, which is just
that
mad,
is not
really.
Bad at all. Yeah.
Spain is a cheap place to get to and a great place to be.
Mm, indeed. Indeed. Who knows what guitars I'll see out there? It's a work trip, so I'll have to report back.
I don't know what Spain's sort of guitar sitch is, you know, really. I don't know how, like, you know if you go to Scandinavia, you get all these fantastic, weird and wonderful things, because Scandinavia seems to get, like, a lot of those old, like, Russian instruments from the 50s and 60s. So you'll see crazy stuff out there, which is really awesome. And, of course, if you go to Germany, then you have access to that wonderful sort of 60s, 70s German instrument revolution. I guess in Scandinavia you also get loads of Hagstrom. I didn't think about that. Yeah. But in Germany, obviously, you get the big, all the Hofner stuff, all the... the names are Framus stuff. That's really cool. But I don't know what you get in Spain. A lot of classical guitars, actually, I guess. In fact, that's something that the keyboard player in my band, Josh, got really into. He really wanted, like, a classical guitar. And we discovered that Spanish-built tiny little luthier classic guitars from, like, 30, 40 years ago go for absolutely no money on eBay and Reverb. Because it's just, like, some old fella who
poured his heart and soul into something, and your mate is going to charge him pittance for his hard work.
Well, that's it. We realised, you know, you could get like a Takamine, or I don't know who, you know, what sort of classical guitars you can get made by the big brands. You could get that. Or if you just hunt eBay and Reverb, you can, well, I guess actually, was this pre-Brexit? I guess maybe it was. So it was way easier for us to get guitars over from Spain. You could just have a look on Reverb and eBay, find some old dude selling the guitar that he had commissioned to be built in like the 60s, and you get, you know, a fantastic like 50, 60-year-old classical guitar. That's what Spain's good for. Mariachi stuff.
I'll look out for it. Although, yeah, just you saying mariachi just reminded me of two things. One, the time that Doritos filmed an advert when we worked at GAK, and they had a mariachi band there. Were you working at GAK at that point, Joe?
I was not. I don't. I could have been, but I do not remember.
Doritos reached out, came in once, and someone was on a recce to find like a music store for a Doritos advert, which involved a mariachi band. And that also reminded me that we used to sell the giant 6-string fretless bass that they play in the mariachi.
Oh yeah, I remember
what's
that.
What's it called? Oh,
it
what's
is
the name
called,
called.
It is called a mariachi.
Do you know Naomi? Because Joe's
just gonna... it's called a guitar.
Yeah,
guitar. Oh wow! I want one. I remember.
They sound amazing.
One.
So you had one in GAK?
Yeah, we had one in GAK at one
I've
point.
I've never seen one in a store.
What do you get? Like the equivalent of 9 frets, but it's fretless and 6 strings, right?
That's, yeah, you basically just. I think you just need to be able to like look the part and then just pluck a few strings and it just works.
So you're saying Joe will be a fantastic guitar on player?
I think the guitar on players tend to be slightly more rotund than me. but I definitely have the moustache for it. I'm halfway there.
They're tuned really weirdly as well, I think. Are they just tuned in fourths?
It's something
A, D, G, C, E, A.
I had this brief
Barry
period.
Barry tune, is it not?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Some Barrys, I think.
I had this brief period where I really wanted my band to become like a tradition. I wanted us to do an album of our songs in traditional mariachi stuff. I really didn't understand cultural appropriation, I think, when I was younger. but I went through the process of trying to order one through GAC. I can't remember. I think it was Barnes & Mullins who stocked whatever that brand was, Matt, that made the guitar arms.
Yes,
I remember contacting them and being like, can you get one of these? And they were like, if you pay the full import for it.
So. Yeah, we did have one at one point. I can't even remember who we sold it to, but I think it's just because it's bass. I think it's just a lot of root notes and you double up with the octave. So you really only like fret like one string and then it's just like a lot of octave stuff. But yeah, very cool. Just a random side note there. But yeah, you do get a lot of cool, like, I actually think, like, with classical, there's some really, really expensive classical guitars out there, purely because they're so much older than traditional electric guitars. So you can really get some super old acoustics. Kind of what I think we were saying at last week, Joe, about Martin and the fact that Martin's been going since, like, 1834 or whatever. And, it's just some seriously old and valuable classicals out there that have had time to, like, wear in and age and just sound amazing.
Yeah, I bet. Naomi, in Dublin, do you find that you see in music shops a lot more, more traditional Irish instruments? Like, do you get a whole bunch of fiddles and, frame drums and stuff occurring?
Frame drums, my God. I'm sure if there are any Irish trad players listening, there'll be...
Audience on the Guitar Nerds community for
I'm just pointing out the obvious, okay?
What other Irish instruments do you get? Are there in the arsenal? I guess flute?
Yeah, well, it's just funny you mentioned because they're traditionally, excuse the pun, in my time, certainly, it's been a little bit harder to actually find... traditional instruments in the bricks and mortar stores because what you have is like a lot of other instrument retail, you have, you know, your sort of budget offering, but then you've an awful lot of craft makers kind of working on the higher end stuff, and I think very often that literally could be sort of a one man or a one person operation, sort of made to order type of thing. So I did actually play a little bit of traditional music growing up.
What did you play?
We were made play it in school, which kind of went well. I went to schools where speaking Irish was the norm, and you actually could get detention.
That's so cool.
It was fantastic. I am so glad that my parents did that. Gael schools is what they're called. Right. And you could get detention for speaking English, actually. Literally.
That's cool. Literally, I'm into this.
Well, I mean, it's you know, promoting the native language,
of
which
course,
absolutely
should
be kept alive. But what was fantastic
we've
was...
We've all seen what's happened to Scotland, you know, so...
it's true. So we were really heavily encouraged to play flute, to play tin whistle, and to play baron, which is the frame drum you speak of.
Yeah.
Had a sort of light experience of that, then got back into it in my teen years, and funnily enough, classical guitar as well to do the senior school exams. There are some really gorgeous instruments out there, like bouzouki is quite a big part of Irish trad music as well.
Bouzouki's so cool. That's of course, I forgot that completely. Of course it's an essential part of Irish music.
Yeah, yeah. Of the stringed instruments, like bouzouki seems...
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I mean, I could be way off here. I'm going off what sort of traditional music I'm into and a specific player called Andy Irvine, which if you've not heard Andy Irvine, please check out his stuff. He was in Planxty, one of the best known sort of Irish trad bands of the sort of 70s onwards. But yeah, so Bouzouki was his thing, which became quite influential in more modern bands. But yeah, like around the stores in Dublin, I can think off the top of my head of two stores that sort of more heavily promote the sort of trad instruments. But it's unfortunately definitely not the sort of thing where any music store you walk into will have your violins and your kind of flutes and stuff like that. Like Bowron's, because they're small and portable, they're really popular with tourists in the same way that Uke's would be. And I suppose Tin Whistles are as well. But yeah, the more in-depth stuff is a little bit harder to find on the ground these days.
I see, yeah.
I actually have a, before we move on, I have a funny story about Bouzoukis.
Go on.
The first time I actually heard about a Bouzouki, I was 16 years old. Working in my first guitar store, we decided to, the guy that owned it was like, he was doing like 7 days a week, basically. He was like, I really need like a day off. So me and my friend worked a couple of like Saturdays for him. And someone came in and went, have you got any Bouzouki strings? And I went,
Is that not what Arnold Schwarzenegger shot the bad guys with in Commando?
yeah, basically. And I was, he was like, yeah, have you got any strings for Bouzouki? And we were like, to Bouzouki. Oops, I just swore. They have to blank that one out, Joe.
I've got a bleep now.
And I was like, you're making that up. And they were like, no, it's like a real instrument. I was like, it's definitely not a real instrument.
I was like,
it's definitely not. And they were like, no, it's like, this was like, I say pre-internet. This is early, not like, not every computer was like hooked up to the internet at this point. I think we had still had WAP on our phones. And yeah, and then I realized, several years later, it was actually a real instrument. I mean, why would you walk into a guitar store incredible. And ask for a Bouzouki strings? Terrible.
My guess as you were beginning the story was, given you were a teenager, was it going to be some hilarious mix-up between Bouzouki and Bouzouka? And
that would have been quite good. No, it was generally a customer asking, and I was like, that's not real.
In the store I worked in Dublin, which in sort of my latter teens, there was a legendary sort of moment, which even in my youth as a total customer advocate, I was really like disappointed by, you know, vicariously, which was that nothing to do with trad, but it was that some very young new guitar player came in asking about capos. And the guy working the floor at the time, who was one of the managers, he said, and I'm going to heavily censor the word he used, but here's the family friendly version was, dude, capos are for idiots. Literally said that to a customer. And also bear in mind that idiots was not the word.
I got what the word was.
Yeah, it went on to become a legendary cringe moment of the store. Just like, talk about crushing someone's dreams of being a transposing guitarist.
Yeah, I think I've witnessed a few of those in my time.
Justice for capos.
Justice for capos, indeed.
Capos
on amps.
I've been looking up traditional instruments that I could possibly purchase from, like, big companies that make, you know, sort of odd traditional instruments. Give yes. the Music actually have their own brand concertina.
They do. It's true.
That is for like sub £200. I could get that and learn to play that.
I think it's really, really important to have sort of entry a level.
Concertina.
Well, oh. A concertina, but B, entry level trad offerings.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I think it's more important than ever with, you know, as the decades roll on, that the music be preserved. And I think anything that helps people get into it without immediately jumping to that like craftsperson level instrument.
Of course. Of
upwards of sort of 2K type of thing.
What, you know? What do we have though, Joe? What's the most traditional British instrument?
I believe it's the football chant.
I was actually going to say the pint glass, but then
I don't know what it is. Who cares what it is?
Because it was when I was on holiday a few
I'm
weeks
ago. I'm sure we appropriated it from someone else. So.
when I was on holiday a few weeks ago, we went to, we were staying sort of in Dorset. We went to this tiny town. And as we went there, there was like Wimborne. They had a three-day folk festival. And yeah. I was like, oh, this is, it was like a lot of people drinking cider and Morris dancing. I was like, oh, maybe that's it. Maybe our traditional instrument is sticks.
Morris dancing.
Yeah, we probably just stole it from the Irish, to be fair. Fiddles and that.
I don't think we have anything, mate. I think it's all...
Yeah, I think there's pretty heavy crossover of British Isles folk in the music, because I know certainly quite a lot of Scottish folk and language sort of historically is very aligned with Irish, because I know there's like in English folk music there's quite a lot of fiddle, flute yeah. and whistle. I think it's just nuanced in the same way that sort of Scottish and Irish folk music would be. Yeah. I'm also painfully aware of my lack of sort of in-depth knowledge, and I'm really, really keen to not insult any lovely listeners who are sat listening, literally surrounded by actual trad instruments.
Well, yeah, I mean, even, you know, again mentioning Josh, the keys player in Polymath, he's from West Virginia, and he occasionally sends us over these little videos that have like been filmed in sort of random Walmart car parks where people get together with bluegrass instruments, but like there's this weird community almost jamming music scene in West Virginia, which is incredible. It's on the surface level you'd think it's almost sort of laughably redneck, but if you actually watch it, it's incredible, like that there is this community for it, and that it's largely freestyled, and that the people are so adept at their instruments, and it's a lot of banjo and mandolin and acoustic based stuff, but it's whole own micro scene within there, which is just really great. And we ended up sort of like being like, this is quite good, maybe we could rip some of this stuff and make it proggy,
really.
You know, so wow. Yeah, it's very cool. It's wonderful when you get those little sort of, and I guess that's the nature of folk, isn't it, you get those little community based genres, almost.
That's
micro
it.
Genres
yeah, and kind of carrying on you know, story and history and legacy, I think, is such a big part of folk music,
yeah,
culturally. Yeah. That's cool. I'd like to look some of that up.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll Walmart send you some links. Folk.
Yeah, it's hilarious. It looks hilarious. Like it's, you know, like it's someone's taking the mic. It's so, because I think Josh had initially sent it to us being like, this is where I'm from. Like you joke that,
oh,
you know,
sure.
We joke that he's redneck and he's like, this is what happens here. But then we were like, oh, actually, this music is great.
Yeah, to use the modern term, this actually slaps.
exactly. Oh, that, dear. Exactly. That. To change the subject completely, someone on the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook, just Guitar Nerds group on Facebook, dear listener, if you're not a part of it, posted a thing of a tack pick, and a pick that I cannot believe truly exists. I thought I'd exhausted my plectrum hunt. It is a plectrum, just a plectrum. There's no electronics here. There's no mechanicalness. It is a plectrum that will make your six-string acoustics sound like a 12-string.
Oh, wait, hold on. I think I've seen something like this before, and yes, they're terrible.
No, it can't be terrible.
What a quick and scathing review.
There used to be something, and I'm sure we've talked about this on the podcast before. It does look a little bit different, but there was a similar thing. I went to, there used to be a really big guitar show in the UK called Music Live, I think, which the guy that runs that now runs the Birmingham Guitar Show. And it was actually in Birmingham, but in the days when every country had its own show, and this was actually at the NEC. And there was someone selling picks called the Jellyfish,
right?
Which again was the same thing, but it was a pick that had a lot of basically like steel strings on the end of it, like really short steel strings that it was again supposed to make your guitar sound like a 12 string, and it was rubbish.
The idea is amazing, though.
This, on the other hand, is just lots of little lumps on a plectrum to make it sound like that. I'm gonna. Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a six string to me, but that's fine. This, nonetheless, I wanted that to be more impressive than it was. I'm still excited about the concept and the idea that it could possibly exist. We'll see.
It's tricky, isn't it, when it comes down to picks, because it does actually play a massive part in your, not only in your guitar sound, but like how you play and all sorts of things. And I guess everyone's got their own take on it, and everyone wants to put their own spin on it. And you're going up against like some serious juggernauts. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How many picks did Dunlop make?
Sure. Yeah.
I guess for me, the one thing that, and this is, you know, just me being a little bit more conscious now I'm a bit older. It's just like, when are those companies going to be more sustainable? Do you know what I mean? How much plastic are they, seriously, are they like smashing out of those factories? And I'm like,
yeah.
So I think someone needs to scale up a really sustainable pick business. I know it sounds silly, but I definitely think there's got to be something in that. There's got to be people that got to be more conscious for that thing.
Yeah. Here's the problem. The guitar industry, and by that I extend that to effects pedals, amps and everything, is pretty old school. And, mm-hmm. You know, by old school, I mean, how to put this tastefully, I'm not sure older generations take the recycling thing quite as seriously as younger generations, and a lot of companies are still owned by older people, and for that reason we are late to the punch. This whole industry is late to the punch, whilst other industries are looking at making things sustainable. And I can count on one hand, on less than one hand, the companies I know who are making things sustainable. People like Trent Guitars, who are making their guitars kind of completely vegan. They're using eco paints. Mark Bass have just released a line of completely recyclable amplifiers, which is really cool.
Oh, that's amazing. That's the first I've heard of any amplifier company doing that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. Because it was something I was talking with Ashdown about. Ashdown have now stocked so that all of their amps are double Wii compliant, which means that they can be repaired no matter what for at least 25 years past their point of order, their point of purchase. And mm-hmm. it's a really important thing that I don't think the industry has really fully got involved in yet, which is an important thing. I think, yeah, obviously plectrums are a massive part of that, because mm-hmm. we lose plectrums so regularly. You buy mm-hmm. packs of plectrums all the time. They are little bits of plastic, which are awful for sea life and, you know, just terrible for the environment in general. Are you still playing chicken picks, Matt?
Yep. Which, again, I guess, if I remember rightly, they were out of a slightly more, I guess, again, probably not recyclable, but they last so long.
They last a like, long time. That's
buy,
the great thing.
I only need to buy, like, 3 picks a year. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which has got to be better than buying a pack of Dunlops every month.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you use, Naomi?
I was just trying to think of clever things to say. And the best I could think was I've just incorporated more Motown into my playing just to reduce my use of plastic.
Yes. Far more sustainable.
No, I am a very loyal Dunlop user. There's been other picks that have sort of caught my attention, but I keep coming back to Dunlop MIDI picks. The 0.96 MIDI pick is my one.
What is a MIDI pick?
Yeah, so when I, a while ago, was sort of looking after accessories for a store that I worked for, which I absolutely loved, just finding out all the weird accessories that people were into, I got really, really into sort of getting as many as possible of Dunlop sort of offering into the store. And their MIDI picks are basically... they are like the Tortex, but just the in-between sizes. So instead of your 88, your 1, your 114, it was like 107 down to 96, down to 83, down to 67. And we ended up very quickly with some seriously loyal Dunlop MIDI users who had never quite found the weight.
Isotope and Native Instruments have teamed up to create the start-to-finish bundle that home recording guitar nerds have been waiting for. Plus, you, dear listener, get an extra 10% off with Guitar Nerds by using discount code NERDS10 at the checkout on isotope.com. From the creative spark to the final touch, their new bundles include pretty much everything you could possibly need, which is great because it's far too easy to sink hundreds of pounds and a big chunk of your time into just picking up random plugins. The Music Production Suite 4.1 and Complete 13 bundle contains over 30 intelligent mixing, mastering and repair plugins, 65 premium instruments, 20 plus expansions and over 35,000 sounds. And if that's a bit basic for you, they've also bundled Music Production Suite 4.1 with Complete 13 Ultimate, which gives you everything that makes Complete 13 incredible, plus a colossal library of added synths, sampled instruments and effects, 115 plus premium instruments and effects, 39 native instruments expansions and over 65,000 sounds. Whew. It sounds like a lot. It is. It's very good, very comprehensive. And as we've come to expect from Isotope, it's very good value. If you're looking to get into home recording, I cannot recommend it more highly. And if you're already into home recording, it really is the one-stop shop for making what you do sound better. This podcast is entirely treated and produced using Isotope plugins, and Native Instruments have been responsible for almost every synth or sample you've heard on our Guitar Nerds jingles. Check out their great new bundles on isotope.com or follow links in the description of this podcast and use discount code NERDS10 at the checkout for 10% off anything in the Isotope arsenal.
Are one of the sort of standout companies really working openly on their sustainability was, and I regret that I forget the name of the sort of overlord company, but the company that owns Arden Luthery and Godin and Seagull and someone else. But one of their huge manufacturing sort of claims was a massive focus on sort of sustainable wood.
Right.
And that was like, it was literally like an agreement at sort of governmental level in Canada that they were... I'm not sure was it exclusively, but a huge chunk of their manufacturing was from already felled wood, like naturally fallen wood. So they were felling absolutely as little as possible.
See, that's very good.
Yeah. But they've been at it for years. You know what I mean? Like it's not a new thing to them. And I wish more of the industry had sort of gotten on that sooner. But of course it's never too late to begin.
No, exactly. It's easier for smaller companies to do that sort of thing, like Grez, mm-hmm. Grez guitars, for example, that we've talked about a bunch, and I have a Mendocino here. A lot of their guitars, their tops are from reclaimed redwood or old growth redwood, where they get that from, decommissioned things or stuff that they've reclaimed. So, that's really cool. But of course, it's easier to do that as a small luthier than that is as a big company.
Yes, of course.
Nonetheless, it is very cool. Indeed. I wanted to talk about a guitar brand that I have seen that I think I vaguely knew about, but I don't think we've ever talked about. I want to talk about Baum guitars. Yeah, which is great. I mean, naming a guitar after the sound that a guitar makes is a great idea.
It's like Kerrang magazine.
Very true. No.
Kerrang. Oh, is that what it is? Is that what Kerrang is?
Yeah. Joe, did you not know that?
I did not know that.
I think...
I knew that when I was 13.
Yeah.
That's the sound a rock guitar makes. Hence, I should buy this rock magazine.
Ah, whereas this is more like a porno guitar, like bam, 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 bam.
From the 70s.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's on the next episode, we'll be discussing Chicka Wow Wow guitars.
But yeah, so Baum guitars, they're a Danish brand. Yeah.
That's as far as you've got in your research.
They are Danish. They are Danish. They're from a place called Ars. which I'm not sure in Denmark. I'm not sure that's how you pronounce it, but that's how I read it, and that made me chuckle. But they're crafted out of Korea, so designed in Denmark, crafted out of Korea, which is great. We're seeing so many more brands being able to do things like this, like come up with great ideas and then utilize some of the great Korean factories that we have to almost semi-mass produce things at affordable prices and make them really interesting and cool.
Yeah, I think it's a bit similar to what Ken was saying, you know, with Reverend and stuff like that. And, you know, Korea, first world country, got a lot of great people that they pay people really well, great factories. You know, a lot of people, I think, traditionally just think of like, you know, oh, they must be cheap. You know, they come from, you know, far away and that sort of thing. But actually, it's just, I think it's really good that you can actually design a great guitar, run a great company. You don't necessarily have to build them, but there's some people out there that will build the guitars for you, you know, prototype them. You know, I remember talking to Rabir about his Chapmans, you know, and going through loads of revisions. It's not like they're like, oh, we followed your blueprints and here's a guitar and lump it or, you know, leave it. You know, you actually get to really develop a brand. So I think it's really exciting that, as you say, companies can make these kind of, you know, more unique guitars, I guess this is one way to put it, and then have them manufactured at a high quality at an affordable price.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, like they're even on like Anderton. If you're in the UK, dear listener, Andertons have got some on offer at the moment, down from like 1200 quid to 899, which is,
ooh,
that is an aggressive price point for their Baum Wingman in Skyline Blue, which is kind of a, I don't know, like a cross between Pelham Blue and sort of Daphne Blue, I guess, but it's metallic. It's somewhere in between there, but I'm talking about like a offset, like 50s inspired, that sort of faux vintage modern, a pair of gold foil P90s that look incredible, these weird block inlays on a rosewood neck, a gorgeous parchment guard, Bigsby loaded, incredible headstock, what looks like a baked maple neck. I mean, this, it's extraordinarily cool and very on point, very in vogue, and for £899, there's an awful lot of cool going on with the Baum Wingman.
You failed to notice or mention actually the coolest thing they make is a bass.
Yes, I was leading up to this.
I was watching, I was like, I agree with everything that Joe says, but I can't take my eyes off the new signature bass that they've released. I'm like, that is so good.
The Pink Thunder.
Great
which,
names.
Well. Which surprisingly, of course, is the instrument that led me to discover this brand.
Exactly.
Ah, is that okay? I wasn't sure if you'd stumbled on the guitars. The Pink Thunder, I have to say, has the actual coolest pickguard I've ever seen.
Yeah, so describe it for our listener.
So a similar body shape to what Joe's describing, certainly heavily retro-inspired, offset. The Pink Thunder is, am I right in saying it's the only bass model
yes
appearing on the side? I think it is. Yeah. So yeah, beautiful offset, very retro body, adorned with none other than an extended lightning bolt shape angular pick guard, which is so, so striking. It goes so against the sort of gentle wide curves of the retro body. You know, it would be one thing maybe to see such a pickguard on a V body or on sort of a more metal body, but I just love how sort of out of place it is. It makes for a really, really striking instrument with a really vibrant pink finish, gold hardware. A lovely piece of work by Seye Adelikan.
Yes, the bass player for Gorillaz, or the live bass player for Gorillaz.
Yeah.
Yeah, the actual bass player for Gorillaz is a cartoon. Plays all the bass lines himself. Do you know, the body shape reminds me of the Dan Electro DC-56?
Oh, the one that was sort of shaped like a square. It was less offset than this. I see the inspiration there.
Do you know what it makes me think of? This is really random, but you know when you get like a big lump of blue tack, and you're like, what am I going to do with that? I'll roll it into a ball, I'll shape it into a square, and then I'll just squish it. And I'm like, that's exactly what the shape is. Yes. Someone's made a square out of like Play-Doh and then just squashed it slightly. And then they're like, oh, that's kind of cool. I could make that into a guitar. Which, to be fair, I'm digging, because this bass is... it's wicked. And that lightning, that Harry Potter inspired pickguard is just absolutely a genius touch.
Don't bring Harry Potter into this. It's a stalwart icon of rock and roll, the lightning bolt. We don't need fake wizards.
Fake. You know,
clouding the...
How dare you? Harry Potter is an institution. But yeah, no, in all seriousness, that is very cool, and I want that bass. I also want the suit that he's wearing.
He's wearing a lipstick pink suit, dear
with
listener.
Like white platform shoes and a white tie, and the lapels of the suit also have the white lightning bolt on it. I hope that suit comes with it. That would be a fantastic touch, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
A suit just in there with the case.
Yeah, just under, you take the guitar off and there's a suit underneath.
Yeah.
It's definitely a very cool bass, but I don't think it's even available to purchase. I think it is literally a signature model that they've made for that fella.
Is it? So it's kind of showcasing the build capability. Well, it's really exciting. I would love to see any...
I've got three customers right here.
Well, exactly, yeah. I'd be super curious to see any further bass builds that they do. Their design certainly lends itself beautifully to bass.
Absolutely, yeah. I hope they do extend. But the shop direct on baumguitars.com is very interesting, because actually they have sold out of these now, but they even sold the prototypes for some of their guitars early on, which is extremely cool. And there was a model called the Leaper, which they do, which is the only one that's not really offset, and I love it. It's like a really fat bottomed double F holes. It's like gold Bigsby, a pair of those gold foil P90s that I told you about, dear listener, and it's like a single cut. It has, even though the pick guard goes over both sides of the body, it still has that wonderful thing that like Gibson and Gretsch do with their pick guards, where it is the pick guards raised off of the body and it's connected to the body by a little hook, if that makes sense. But just everything about the Leaper is extremely cool. I wish it didn't have gold hardware off of the bat, obviously, but you know, I'm sure that's something that they could get around. I don't know why we haven't been talking about this brand a bunch. These are very cool guitars for the money. Like, very. If these were $2,500, I appreciate they're Korean built, and so these are priced, you know, for what they're worth. But if these were $2,500, I'd be going, damn, these are great looking guitars.
Absolutely. Yeah. The Wingman has really got me. Their choice of finishes are super tasty as well. What was the light blue color that you were looking at? The sort of skyline blue is really sort of classy, but then on the site they have an Inca gold with black pickguard. Totally changes the mood. Much more sort of rock looking vibes. Yeah, I really like their offering. And going back to the sustainability that we were talking about, I love any maker that lists their bee stock and lists their prototypes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, any like that can really offer someone who's interested, maybe who just isn't quite in budget, it can still put the instrument into their hands, and there's, you know, hopefully less sort of overstock being made then in the production runs. It's absolutely all good. All good.
Absolutely. Well, I hope the word, I mean, I don't know. Am I late to knowing about BAM guitars? I'm not entirely sure. I feel like Anderton's doing a sale with them means that maybe not enough people know about BAM guitars, because these look very, very cool. I hope we help to spread the word.
There's just a lot. I think the hardest thing, I mean, obviously building a brand is obviously, you know, the hard thing for any company, but especially now with so many, you know, the option to go out and do this sort of thing, like it's not just enough to be unique in terms of body shape. And obviously the quality is going to be really good. It's about really, I don't know what it is, like just being able to offer something that a lot of people are going to find like a really, like Reverend, I think they've found a really good ground in stuff that's got traditional roots, but, you know, does something a little bit different. And they've spent so long, 25 years, like building up an incredible brand. Must be really difficult, you know, for companies like this to just get started, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I completely agree.
You know, where do you go? It's like, yeah, a factory's going to build these guitars for you. It's like getting them in the hands of people. And again, just coming back to what Ken was saying, I think it was just like, you know, I think, what was he saying early on? Like lots of people trying it going, oh no, I couldn't, you know, if I played that, I'd get laughed off stage and, you know, it's got to be expensive or whatever. And, you know, I think the mentality of people's really changed, and people are, well, I guess it feels like people are more likely to own lots of instruments that cost €1,000 than one guitar that cost €10,000.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. And I think it's kind of, I think it's testament to how great the guitars are coming out of Korea. Again, I spoke about this earlier, but just the fact that we've suddenly got access to these brands in Korea making incredible guitars. So it's kind of like anyone can think of a great idea for a guitar, and Korea can make them to a really, really high standard.
Indeed.
Which is very cool. Right. Okay. Before we go any further, I want to present to you two something that I need your help with. I was looking through my guitar collection the other day, and I was thinking there is actually a glaring omission. I do not own a baritone. The basics doesn't count. So that doesn't count. That doesn't count. I need a baritone. You know, basics is something different. That is something different. Especially because I've got mine down in like D standard with ridiculous strings. You know, it's something else. So I want just a straight up baritone. But of course, I appreciate that, you know, like I'll have, if I spend a lot of money on a baritone, I'll have Jay Cross and Mark Packham telling me that I should be saving for a house, you know. So what I've got to do is I've got to try to purchase a baritone for a reasonable amount of money that's still very good and lots of fun to play, which leads us to our next jingle.
The Battle of Barry's Throne.
There you go. Well, neither of you heard that, but it was because I have to add it in. I have to add it in later. But that was the jingle for the Battle of Barry's Throne. I've got myself down to like 5 possibilities, but I'm willing to accept alternatives from either of you, Naomi or Matt.
Okay.
So, you know, think about, I know I'm putting you on the spot here, guys, but, you know, think about baritone alternatives to these options, for affordable baritones that I can get. So I've got 5. So let me list the 5 for you, dear listener, as well as my co-hosts. First of all, I'll start with the cheapest, not a brand you have ever heard us talk about, and a brand that I fundamentally stand absolutely opposed to, because I do not like when retailers do own brands, because they're going to be poo. But Despite my best efforts. It's true. Despite my best efforts, everyone says that Harley Bentons are pretty good. So one of my options is the Harley Benton MR Classic Baritone, which is their... why is the name escape me? What the type of
guitar? Moss Wright.
Moss Wright, thank you. Thank you, Matt. So this is a Moss Wright style double P90 loaded guitar. You can get it in Sunburst. It's got matching headstock. You know, it's just sort of a maple back. The white scratch, but you've got that angled P90 in the neck. It's baritone. Yes, it's very super affordable. It's £211 on Thomann's website, but it's simple, it's a cool body shape. The company, relatively speaking, has a good reputation for super affordable stuff, and that's not a lot of money. So there is option one. There's the Harley Benton at £211. Now, I couldn't talk about baritones without, you know, whilst excluding Squire. So our second option is the Squire Paranormal Baritone Cabernita. So again, we've got a dual P90. P90 is my favourite pickup, so that's already a win. We've got a dual P90 loaded Cabernita style telly. Very, very cool. Downside is because the paranormal stuff has like that satin, that modern neck. I'm not a big fan of that, but it's okay. I can get around that because it's so cool, because it's a Cabernita telly. And you can get it in Sunburst, which is way more my speed, but I could also get it in a Surf Green, which is pretty cool and original. £345 is what where they go. Not bad at all. Yeah, then that is a pretty good price. So that's the Squire Paranormal. I think I've moved out of price reference now, but Gretsch, obviously the sax player in my band who does second guitar and a lot of our stuff, he plays one of these. Gretsch do the G5260T, which is their jet baritone, and they do a Bigsby loaded baritone, which I'm very interested in.
Love it.
More than that, they do it in silver with a black plate, and it looks incredible. This is a very cool guitar. I've also watched some videos of people turning these into bass sixes, so this kind of doubles up as being a real kind of option for me for doing some absolutely crazy stuff with. So I am a big fan of this model. So it's their sort of solid body single cut, dear listener. Bigsby loaded, silver. It's super cool. 577 though. So we're getting up there. £600 on the Gretsch. Now the last two options, both Dan Electro. Dan Electro 58 Longhorn Baritone. What? That's right, dear listener. You can get the Longhorn, which, you know, you could only really get as a short scale bass for a long, long time. The Longhorn is available as a baritone guitar, which, just for originality and ridiculousness, the Longhorn, dear listener, is that onion-shaped body, if you're not familiar. In
The Onion.
The Onion. In that wonderful copper burst finish, so sort of white to weird orange. That is super cool. And, of course, you can access every single fret thanks to the weird onion Longhorn body shape. So just for being cool, original and different, I'm well into this. £15 on one of those. And the last Dan Electro option is their 56, which is, they do their 56 vintage baritone, which is available with a in a single cut. It's a hollow body, and it has their f-hole on one side, two of their lipstick pickups, that gorgeous, wonderful, it's actually a proper bridge, so it's not just that weird like wooden saddle that you get on the Dan Electros. There's a proper bridge on there. Is very cool. £494 for one of these, and you can get it in an awesome sort of ice white, again with a rosewood neck, six-a-side headstock. Very, very cool. D on the body. Ooh, we like that. So those were the sort of the five I boiled it down to, but I'm up for alternative suggestions. I want to hear what you guys think and if you have any other options for me. Naomi, where are you sitting? What one of these is the best option?
I think there's a few gorgeous options in here. In terms of alternative suggestions, because I have the memory of a goldfish with long COVID, refresh me, were you specifying budget baritone? Battle of Barry's budget baritone?
It would be great if I could not spend a bunch of money, but also, okay. You know, like, I mean, I have a lot of credit cards, so it's not, you
it's
know,
true.
It's not true. The end of the world if it's
that's
it's
what credit's there
one.
For.
I am not going to be here long enough to pay for it all, so, you know, that's my plan.
Yeah. Party now, pay later. There is a strong contender that we've not yet mentioned, and that is the Reverend Descent. The fact that there is an offering in the Reverend catalogue, I think we shouldn't.
It's very true. Very true. We shouldn't ignore the fact that Reverend actually doing it. It's the Descent is the model that's available as a baritone.
Yes, right. Descent or a baritone. And that is largely for their general build and in sort of baritone in between pitch sort of register. I think build hardware and parts are something that are, you know, potentially leaned on that little bit heavier. There's a Railhammer humbucker pickup in there as well, which I would just be dying to hear again at baritone range. The other long-time contender for me is Squires. I think it was a vintage modified Jazzmaster Barry that they did years ago. And it came in Antigua, which
Yes.
You know.
These were very... They're like rocking horse poo now, though, aren't they? You can't really find them.
No, and that is because they were ace. They were so good.
I wish we'd realised that at the time. Naomi, were you working in a guitar shop when they came out?
That's how I came across it. And it was like possibly three of them that came through the store at the time. And it was definitely one that I look back on as a bit of a sleeper.
Yeah.
I just at the time, couldn't really justify maybe outlaying for an instrument I wasn't going to be playing in the band I was in at the time as a bassist, you know.
Right.
And God, I wish I'd gone for it because it they were just fantastic. And I think the finish is so weird. It's one of those ones that you'll be guaranteed to fall in and out of love with, but always kind of come back to being fond of. So that was, that would have been my quirky alternative vote. But of the options that you've selected, I think I have to say I hate the longhorn shape. I really, it could not do it less for me.
Damn it.
Like, it's sort of a Marmite. It's sort of like, I can completely see what was being gone for design-wise all those years ago. And I can see why it's iconic, you know, because it's just so different and so out there. But I utterly could not picture myself wearing one of those and being okay with it. Beyond that, I think the Cabernetta Telly is a really pretty instrument. I think it's really, really nice visually. And also the two P90s will be a strong contender for me spec-wise. Going beyond that, I think I would break my spook around Dan Electro for the 56.
It is beautiful. It looks, I don't know, like, prestigious. It looks high quality.
It does. Yeah, I think it looks far beyond its price. Additionally, I know it was it the ice white.
I think they just called it white.
It was
but
just
I
white.
Said ice to try and make it sound posher.
Why wouldn't you? But their other finish options in the baritone are stunning as well. They do a large flake black sparkle. They do, I think it's called Dark Aqua, but it's a really, really vibrant sort of surf turquoisey finish as well. So I think there are some really, really strong options there. And just overall design-wise, I love it to look at. I think the two lipstick pickups, matching headstock, and just overall sort of shape, they just fit well with the sort of scale and aesthetic of the whole thing.
Yes, you might have just you might have sold me on the 56. Matt Knight, where are you coming in at?
For you, like you said, Harley Benson, I think actually there are some quite cool guitars in their range and some really accessible guitars for players. Like, again, just from a money perspective, they just make a lot of options. And actually, yeah, seeing a lot of people talk about them, and considering like they do like a range of like hollow bodies that are like 160 quid, like, I think that's quite cool. But saying that, I don't like Mosrite style guitars at all. And right. I think it looks rubbish. So I just don't like that guitar personally. I could see you playing the Dan Electro more than anything. I think the Cabernita, as much as I'm into Shell Pink and those kind of colours, I think it looks also a bit rubbish. I don't know what it is. It's just, it's not.
If you're
going
to do that colour, it has to. It
I think
to
it's
go
the pickups.
Vintage gloss.
I think it's the pickups. I don't know. I think it just needs one pickup and it needs a maple fretboard for me. But looking at the Squire range, they do a Telecaster in black. That's a baritone.
They do. I did notice that and excluded it, but maybe I should.
Which is quite
just
cool.
Because I was thinking about the paranormal, but you might have. Yeah, maybe I've made the wrong decision.
I think the only thing I might find with that is it's probably a gloss neck and feel that maybe...
Well, that's what I want.
Oh, well then...
I don't like satin necks, Matt. They're rubbish.
No,
they are
the
for
best.
People who
they're
make excuses best. About...
I know, and I love excuses.
About guitars.
Oh, I can't, Joe, I can't
feeling
play
a certain way and that being the ways and you can't play it properly.
I think you're wrong.
Do you know what I would do, Joe?
I just think you're wrong.
I would get the Telecaster. I would take the neck pickup out. And I would,
yes.
I would just make it. I would just put a. I'd make it an Esquire baritone, and everything would be right with the world.
That's the best idea. That's the best idea because you don't need a neck pickup anyway in anything.
I think as well for that. I mean, that's what I did to my beer baritone. I think neck pickups on baritones can get pretty muddy. So I think you want something that cuts through. You want something that's got a bit of. Bite to it, so a slightly hotter pickup works really well. Vintage ones are just a bit bottom heavy and a bit muddy.
That's a very good point.
So that's the way that I would go with that personally.
It's a great suggestion, Matt. I think I'm probably I'm stuck between the Dan Electro and that. I'm going to take some time to think about it and I'm going to make a decision. And whilst I think about that, we're going to end the podcast and go over to the Patreon and talk about some more guitar stuff over there. So that, dear listener, is all the time we have on this week's episode. You can join us over at Patreon, patreon.com/guitar nerds. We're going to talk more about this. And you can become a Patreon supporter for as little as $1 a month. At the dollar tier, you get this episode ad-free and early. $5 gets you access to the Patreon special. $10, you get the lot, plus I'll sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. You can find us on all your favorite social media platforms. Join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook and get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Lean in you.
Yeah.